the show now, 222-1180. The Choice One toll-free line, 1-800-295-1180. Or Star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers. Now, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
That's exactly right. You are listening to Sound Bites. What could be more fun than a Saturday afternoon with us? Nothing. Exactly the correct answer. I am Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And on the buttons, we have Rob Linton, and we'll be taking your calls at the numbers you just heard. And before we do that, however, so call now. Call early, call often. Rob is answering the phones even as we speak, so if it's ringing, hang on. Before we do that, we'll get to the news, and we'll start with the Mac stuff this week, I think.
Well, Apple and Amazon have announced that Amazon is going to start carrying, or actually has been carrying, some of the new Apple product line, including the new iMac. And Amazon is saying that it's... I lost it. Need that highlighter I forgot this week. Apple laptops and desktops occupy 10 of the top 25 best-selling spots at the Amazon computer store. And a lot of that is because of the popularity of the iMac. Unfortunately, they're getting they're still very hard to get a hold of. Apple took 150,000 pre-orders for the iMac, and last week they managed to ship 6,000 units, which seems a pittance until you work out 6,000 units in a week. That's an awful fast clip.
Yeah.
So they're making them as fast as they can, but they're starting to quote now 3 to 5 weeks for shipment.
They are awful pretty, I got to say that.
They are.
Yep.
Slick unit.
So hopefully as soon as their production ramp up even more and they start filling a lot of the back orders, they'll get a little more available and you'll be able to walk in off the street and buy one.
We're all waiting for that. And Dave, what's going on?
Another virus, but this one, folks, at least they might be a little ahead of the game as far as us here in the U.S. There's a Janer worm, and it was discovered in Germany. So right now, you know, it's not affecting us, but they're already saying that there's clones out there that will come into the English world and other countries to literally wipe out your whole Windows directory. And it comes in as though it's some Trojan info newsletter warning you of various Trojans and everything else, and you can sign up for the newsletter, and, you know, it'll keep porn and everything else away, and they're just trying to stay on top of things. Well, when you actually get into it, it turns out it's the virus, and it, like it says, will get a go in there and wipe out your whole Windows directory. So, again, like we say week after week, folks, stay on top. Every Thursday, if you don't get a chance on Wednesday, because they're kind of sporadic on when they come out on Wednesday, both Norton and McAfee being the two biggest when they come out with their updates. But definitely by Thursday, the updates are, you can almost be guaranteed that they're there. Go to the website, get the updates, and run them. We're still seeing a lot of folks sitting there saying, oh, I run my virus every week. And then I go in there, and the DAT files haven't been changed.
Right. For those of you who are using Microsoft's Media Player, that's this week's poll on our website. We'll be talking about that a little later. But you should know that the program tracks user information. Every CD you play, every song you play, every DVD you watch, every video you download from the Internet is logged into a file on your computer. You can't delete that file because if you do, Media Player won't run anymore. In addition to logging that file, it sends the information to Microsoft. So that's kind of an interesting thing. Just a month ago, Bill Gates shut down the entire company to have them concentrate on privacy and security concerns. He wrote in a memo, users should be in control of how their data are used. Policies for information use should be clear to the user. Users should be in control of when and if they receive information to make best use of their time. This particular feature of Windows Media Player would seem to conflict with those statements, but do not worry, Microsoft is on top of things. With the speed of light, they have fixed the problem by changing the privacy statement on their website to make it all okay to do what they feel like doing. So those of you using Media Player, don't go anywhere you shouldn't, because everybody else will know. So we're going to go to the phones now, and our first caller is Roger from Rochester. Welcome, Roger. What's your question?
Hi.
You there?
Yeah. I'm there. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm
now
here.
That we've established where we all are, what's your question?
Okay. I think I blew a hard disk. It's an HP, and I got a horrible virus, and half the disk is all bad sectors, half of it. And I ran scan disk. Mm-hmm. I did everything possible. I got Norton's. I got probably anything anybody else has got.
Have you tried reformatting the hard drive?
Yes, I did. As a matter of fact, I even went to DOS, and I used slash U on, unconditional format to try to really do that.
Right.
And everything still comes up the same. And
well,
I ran
scan disk
ran for a whole week. A whole week.
God bless you. You are patient.
Well, then, it might be just time to say the heck with it and go for a new hard drive. Hard drives aren't that expensive.
Well, it came through email. I don't understand how the hell that happened, but it did.
Unlikely a virus could cause bad sectors.
No, it can't.
It could be that it's causing the program to erroneously report bad sectors.
Well, but if you reformatted the hard drive, what's likely happened is that you were having some problems before but didn't really notice them much. And then in the process of fixing the virus, started using sectors of the drive where those bad things were, and
the only other thing that you could actually do is to what they call F-disk the drive. F-disk eliminates the whole FAT table, everything else, and that's literally starting at ground zero, where format is just reestablishing the FAT table and everything else.
And
you might try,
Is that the DOS command, the old DOS command?
Right. F-disk.
You want to make sure you do a power down before you reboot, because a lot of viruses live in memory and can survive a restart. You actually have to power down to be sure the virus is
gone. Boot from a known good boot floppy with F-disk on there.
Yeah, from there
floppy.
You'll delete the partition. You can reboot. Again, like Steve said, power it right off, bring it back up, and then reestablish that partition all over again, and then do a format.
Okie doke.
Okay, I'll try
Give
that.
Give it a shot. Otherwise,
good luck.
I just got to buy another hard disk.
That's how it works. Sorry.
And they're bigger, faster, and cheaper than they used to be.
That's exactly right. Our next caller is Alan from Parenton. Welcome, Alan. What's your question?
Oh, Nick and you guys, I got a problem with Meteor Player, but I don't think it's related to what you just talked about when you came on here.
Well, that's not a problem. That's just the way it's supposed to work. Go to their website, read the privacy statement. You'll
that's
see
the way
everything
it was
is
designed.
Fine. Yep. Go ahead. What's your problem with it?
My problem was this is I can't seem to get it to work. I downloaded it all right. I can see the icon on my desktop and down in the tray and stuff, but it won't work.
What happens when you try to play something?
Nothing. When you get the little indicator and you push the forward arrow.
Yeah.
Nothing happens.
What types of files are you opening in it?
Well, I'm trying to listen to some webcast.
Yeah.
And it only gave me a choice of Media Player.
Yeah.
I downloaded the Media Player and tried to listen that way.
Well, webcast is usually done from inside a web page. It uses the Media Player plugin. So you have to go to the web page and say view that movie, and then it opens Media Player with that stream address.
All right. I went through all of that and the instructions to test it and everything.
Can you play like MP3 files with any problem?
Yes, I can play those.
Okay, so the problem ends up really being video, then, you're saying?
Well, no, it's audio from the audio portion, both probably, because it just doesn't go anywhere. It just sits there.
So if something's on your hard drive, you can play it, but if something's in a website, you cannot.
I believe that's true, right.
Okay, that does point us to the plug-in. There should be a plug-in that installed on what. What web browser are you using?
Explorer, and was it 6?
Yeah, that should work.
6, I think.
You might have to reinstall some of the plugins.
You might.
What's the process for doing that?
They're supposed to install with the Media Player. What version of Media Player are you running?
Well, the one that just came down is 7.1.
Yeah.
One of the tricks is that your browser has to be closed when you run the installer so it can load the plugins.
Right. If the if the browser, what you're supposed to do is when you download it, save it. Don't open it. Save it to the hard drive. Shut down your browser, then install it.
Right, if some of the other features opened within the Explorer,
right,
it might not install correctly.
Give that a try. Let us know what happens, okay?
Okay, guys. Thank you.
Thanks. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave, Steve, Rob on the buttons, and me, Nick, on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. It's true. I am Nick Francesco. I have Dave Enright and Steve Ray sitting on this side of the booth, and on the other side of the glass wall, Mr. Rob Linton. You can give us a call if you're in the 585 area code. It's 222-1180. If you're outside the 585 area code, it's the choice-free toll, choice one toll-free line, 800-295-1180. And if you're a Verizon Wireless customer, star 1180 on your cell phone. Speaking of cell phones, the master of the Segway goes to Jeff in his car right now. Jeff, are you pulled over?
No.
Uh-oh. Okay, what's your question?
Hands-free?
Hands-free.
Yeah.
Okay.
I have two questions for you.
Yeah.
If I'm on the internet, if I have email go to my internet site, like my Yahoo Mail,
right,
and I open a virus there, does that affect my computer at all?
Yes, it does.
Mm-hmm.
Because although the mail came through Yahoo, it actually gets opened on your computer.
Yep.
If you if you're using their web interface,
right,
and all you're doing is looking at the mail, it depends on the kind of virus it is. Some of them are designed to work through webmail. They use VB scripts or JavaScripts, and if you have those running, which you kind of have to read webmail, then you will get them. Some of them need you to click on a link or download a file, but in general, yes, you can get them.
So if you go to your command prompt and use pine, that's about the...
that's about it.
Right.
Right.
What's your other question?
There's three antiviruses that I... software that I always hear about, like OnTrack, McAfee, and Norton.
Right.
Yep.
Which one of those would you guys recommend?
Six of one, half dozen of the other. I've been a fan of McAfee's ever since 1980 when I met John McAfee at a conference, but, you know, my personal preference. It's up to you.
There's also Inoculant.
Inoculant is, that's $10 a year from Computer Associates. And
until recently, I preferred Norton because it had an auto schedule feature, but now McAfee has added that.
Yeah, right. So
you have to be a little careful with McAfee. They have several versions. They have their McAfee Virus Clinic, which runs continuously while you're connected to the internet. So if you're using a dial-up modem, that's not the one you want to get. You want to get McAfee Virus Scan, which is offline, and then only dials to update when it needs to.
Right.
Okay.
There you go.
Thank you much.
Thank you very much. Our next caller, Brian from Fairport. Welcome, Brian. What's your question?
Hey, okay. First of all, is this privacy thing with Media Player only on the new version?
It appears to be version 8 is the one they've talked about this week.
But who knows?
Okay, I only knew that. I only thought they were up to 7.1.
No, so yeah, 7.1 and version 8 is the one that's coming out. Yeah, but it looks like whatever one is the latest one.
Okay, because I'm still on 6.4. I called a couple weeks ago. I had a problem with I could play some AV files before, but then I couldn't. You said there's some things probably in the registry.
Yeah.
I took everything out. It took forever. It was all over the place. McAfee out. It didn't work. Now, let me answer this. Does formatting the C drive affect the registry?
It wiped it all
wiped
out.
It out. It's gone.
I did. I wiped it. I reloaded Windows. They still won't play.
Are these ones that used to play?
Yes.
Okay, here's the deal. Mm-hmm. Some movie files already have... Everyone needs what's called a codec.
Compressor decompressor.
And some of those are built into Media Player. Some are not. So, for example, if you've gotten a movie that ends in .mov, that's a QuickTime movie, and it will not play in Media Player.
Right.
Some versions of DivX...
Right, I can't play any DivX.
Right, won't play without downloading a specific codec, which, by the way, you can't do from Microsoft's site. It can't find them. there are some versions of AVI files, some version, you know, so...
These are all AVIs.
Yeah, some... You will find that there are many files that you can't run without a specific codec, and unless you know the person who wrote the thing and can find out from them what codec they used, You're doomed to failure.
So how did I play it before, though?
Might have accidentally gotten it, you know, when you, or the person that sent it to you might have sent you that codec.
And then you accidentally deleted the codec.
Yeah, right.
Well, see, I got all this stuff. It's the Seinfeld episodes. I got them off Kaza. And they used to play. You don't know who you're getting them from. It's a different person every time.
Right. Well, that's exactly right. And so whatever they've set them up in, now if you got them from Kava, you may find the codec on Kava.
Well, I might, but, I got like 15 shows that came from 15 different people.
Yeah. The other thing you could try is installing QuickTime and see if they can play the AVI.
Right. I tried that.
QuickTime has different codecs.
I tried, there's a media player encoder or something. There's another Indio codec set. I tried that.
The only one left you could try is the one from, it's called Og Vorbis, OGGVORBIS, and you can get that at, we'll put this on our website. It's
That's
a little whack, but you can get it at www.ogg-vorbis.com, ogvorbis.com.
And that's an AV player?
Mm-hmm. It's an AV player. It's a different kind. It's an open source multimedia player and encoder, by the way. So there's all kinds of stuff up there, and we'll get that up on the webinar.
Okay, thanks, guys.
Thanks. Our next caller at Sound Bites will be Al from Rochester. Welcome, Al. What's your question?
Nick, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
All right. I got a question. I'm going to be installing a new motherboard. Never did it before.
Yeah?
The five little plugs, for your main power, your reset,
right. Yeah.
And your lights and your speakers.
Mm-hmm.
How important is that they go, that they get connected to the right plugs on the motherboard?
Well, the key thing though is with these new the newer motherboards, the one that is crucial is your power.
And in addition to having them in the right place, you have to have the polarity right.
Yeah, because otherwise, you can, the reset one, if you mess that up, no biggie, because if you hit the reset button, it's not going to do anything.
And the high drive light, the power light, if the light doesn't come on, you probably have the polarity backwards.
Right, but the key one...
Or if it's on all the time, if it's the hard drive light, you've got it on backwards.
Right, but the key one, though, is the power for the motherboard that feeds to your power source, so that when you push that power button on, that's the only way that motherboard is going to kick on. So definitely look, if you've got the manual for it, look in the booklet. It'll tell you how to hook them up.
It's telling me, but I'm not quite. I mean, the manual shows like seven different plugs, and I've only got five coming off the computer, and they're all coming from the front of the case.
Well, then you might want to go.
You might not have some that the motherboard handles. There might be like a front panel USB jumper on the motherboard that you don't have.
Well, what they do quite often, though, is they'll do revisions to the motherboard, and the manual doesn't always get updated right away. What I would recommend is go to the manufacturer for that motherboard and see if there are any updates to the specs. Quite often they'll put supplements, if they get a chance to.
Addenda.
Yes, into the manual.
Or errata is the other one I like.
Right, yeah, you would.
But go ahead and check with that motherboard manufacturer, and you might see a revised manual with the corrected pin configuration.
But a lot of times there are going to be extra connections for things you don't have. The common one...
For the future.
Yeah, the power... power reset, the power LED, the hard drive LED, and the speaker are the common ones.
The hard drive LED is the one that I'm not finding, because like I said, I've got the main power, and
sometimes the hard drive LED connection can be separate or off maybe 2 or 3 inches one way or the other from the motherboard, not with your normal connections. You might find it in another area within on the motherboard. They don't always put it on that same strip where you hook up the reset and the power and all that.
Okay.
Like I ran into a motherboard the other day that had a little tiny speaker on the motherboard.
Yeah.
But no speaker connection, so I couldn't hook the real case speaker up to the motherboard.
Yeah, because they use that one off the motherboard.
Yeah, that was annoying.
Okay, Alan, sorry, we got to take a break.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you very much. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton on the buttons, and me, Nick Francesco, on America's longest-running radio show, Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. But everybody'd have to be able to type it 94 words a minute.
No lie.
I'm not going to play that game. We're back. I'm Nick Francesco with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton on the buttons, and Ron from Rochester just sitting patiently on the phone. Welcome, Ron. What's your question?
Hi, guys. Nice show.
Thank you.
I got a problem here, and I think we made it a little worse. We went into...
What do you mean, we? Go ahead. What's your question?
Well, me and another guy.
Okay.
At least he owns up to it, though.
Yeah. We were trying to solve one problem about connecting to the Internet, but we went into Device Manager, and under modems, we deleted all the things that were under there, CD-ROM and dial-up network.
Yeah.
I thought all that stuff would appear in the recycle bin. It does not.
No.
It doesn't.
You got to go reinstall all those.
Well,
right.
The modem, when you reboot, Windows should auto-detect the modem and say, oh, here you got a modem, and that should come back.
But the modem came back.
But as far as the dial-up network, what you've got to do there is go into the control panel under network. You click on Add, and under clients, you look under...
Protocols, and what's the third one?
Well, it's under Protocols.
Those are the two important ones.
Oh, the other one. But the client...
Adapters.
Right. But you want to go into Protocols, and you can go down to... not Protocols. It's Adapter.
Yeah,
it's
Adapter. The dial-up adapter, your
under
Ethernet
Microsoft.
Card.
Under Microsoft, under Adapters, will be Dial-Up Dialer. And you can select that, and it will reinstall it.
Okay, because it didn't when I was trying to...
No, it won't automatically do it for you. You got to go ahead and do it because you deleted it.
Also, the CD-ROM?
Either that or if it's on your CAB files.
Yeah, the CD should have been auto-detected.
Okay, because it was playing music, okay, but when I tried to put the CD in and... where it says have disk, mm-hmm. It would not recognize a CD-ROM.
Oh, that's a problem in the way Windows boots. If you're recognizing the devices on boot, quite often the auto-detect happens before it recognizes the CD player. So you can't load your driver off a CD. In those cases, you have to say cancel or finish later.
Yeah.
Go down to the desktop where the CD is now recognized, then go to the device manager and update the driver from there.
Okay, we'll give it a whirl.
Give it a shot.
All right, thank you much.
Thanks, Ron.
That's always annoying. You want to load your drivers, but the CD's not recognized
yet.
Yeah,
and you can't get at it.
Yeah.
Because it hasn't been installed yet.
Right, exactly. Our next caller, Jerry from Rochester. Welcome, Jerry. What's your question?
Neophyte. If I want to scan a picture and send it out through Outlook Express, email it,
yeah.
Okay? When I move it from ScanJet to Outlook Express, it turns into a billboard. Might take a screen and a half to see the whole picture.
It depends on what size you've scanned it at.
Yeah.
See, what you scan it at and what it shows up in the thumbnail in the ScanJet software are two different things. So when you scan it, you can pick a picture size.
And resolution.
And what you want... It depends on what you intend the final use for that picture to be. If you're going to put it on the web, it doesn't have to be more than 72 dots per inch, and it shouldn't be a lot more than, say, 300 by 300.
And it should be saved in a JPEG format.
And it should be JPEG. If you're going to send it to somebody to look at on their screen, again, JPEG and certainly not much bigger than 300 by 300, maybe 500 by 500. If you're going to print it out, then the bigger and higher resolution, the better.
And your scan program might be saving it as default as a PCX file
TIFF.
Or a TIFF, which are bigger.
It's probably defaulting. You know, you scan it 8.5 by 11, you get 8.5 by 11 at 300 dpi. When you view it on screen, the screen's only 72 dpi, so you're actually seeing it at four times actual size.
Right.
Yeah, fine. Now, the only way I've found to control it is to adjust every picture that I'm going to send with the dimensions file.
Right,
or with
yeah.
the dimensions control.
Before you scan it, you should be able to set the resolution of the scan.
Make that your default in the scanner software.
Oh, okay.
And then it'll all come out that same way. That's in the preferences for the scanner software. Preferences or properties or defaults, depending on the software
settings.
You're using. Settings, yeah.
Well, thank you very much.
I got a
place to climb into it now.
Congratulations. What could be more exciting than that? I'll tell you what could be more exciting, talking to Judy from Hilton. Welcome, Judy. What's your question?
Hi, I love your show. I just found it a couple weeks ago, and when I was looking on your website, I see you've been there for a few years.
Yeah, 12 and change.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
12 more.
Thank you.
That's
what we want to hear.
Appreciate it.
I've got a question and a backup. First of all, I'd like to learn about some of this stuff. Where could I start with my computer education so I can understand what you're all saying?
You can check even with your school system out there. In Hilton, quite often they have continuing ed programs out there. They have a number of them in the city.
Okay.
I've noticed also
in, Monday or Tuesday's paper, Xerox has been putting on a lot of free seminars for folks about learning computer, learning Word.
For recently displaced Xerox employees.
Yeah. It's literally for anybody that you can come. All you got to do is call and register. They're free, and they will teach you a lot of the basics.
There's a local free university in Rochester. I forget exactly what the name of it is, but they're offering computer classes.
Another good place is the local users groups. There's a PC users group that meets the second Tuesday of the month at East High.
For those of us in the Western New York area, we have Jack's List, which is jackslist.com.
Okay.
No apostrophe. And that lists darn near every group of two or more people who meet for any reason anywhere in Western New York.
What about formal education? I don't want to learn how to use Windows because I know that.
Right.
But no, that's what I'm saying. If you check out, when's your article come out? My Mondays?
Mondays.
In the Mondays business section,
okay,
there's a whole listing of things that are going on for the week.
Okay.
And like I say, they offer programs like Word, Excel, PowerPoint.
But if you're looking for longer term training,
that's the one.
Getting a degree or a certificate,
that's the one.
Then you need to look at the local area colleges.
So MCC, I could start there.
Most of the colleges have adult education or continuing education, as they call it, classes. Places like RIT, where I happen to be, have certificate programs for various things. So your best bet is to call the student services of the various colleges
and
find out what's available.
Training centers in town. There's New Horizons in Henrietta.
Right.
Element K, what they
right
rename
across the street
themselves.
From my shop.
In
right.
Brighton, yeah. So you should be able to go to the Yellow Pages under computer training as well.
Yeah, this is more to understand like some of the lingo you're using today.
Yeah, that's more like what you need to do.
For that, you can even get a book, Computer Dictionary, and defines a lot of the
Dummy series is fantastic.
Yeah. Okie doke.
My follow-up.
Oh, yeah.
Sure.
I was trying to get into Windows Update. I kept getting an error message. Cannot display page. So it referred me to one of the Microsoft articles, like Q243787.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Gives you the symptoms, the cause, and the resolution.
Right.
And having the skeleton knowledge that I do, I did pretty good until I got to right-click the CV3 class file.
Can you click other, and then click yes to confirm.
In parentheses, if you cannot locate the CV3 class file,
go home.
About it.
Can you get
continue
to other web pages?
For removing Windows Update controls. So you go over to Windows Update controls, and it says, the first thing it says is unregister your WUV3ISDLL file. Well, good luck, folks. I don't even know what that is or where it is.
Right.
My question is, do you think I could really do this, or how else could I facilitate it so I can get back into Windows Update?
Well, there's a couple of things. Can you get to other web pages?
Yes.
What version of Windows are you running?
The problem is that there's a special file that's either corrupted or damaged.
See, what they said too was that sometimes Microsoft updates the way to get into it, and you're just not updated.
What version of Explorer are you using?
IE5.
Try going to 6 by going up to the next version, and that will correct everything.
Okay.
So try that.
Give that a try, Judy. We're going to take a break. We'll be back in a little while with Sound Bites on 1180 WHAM. I don't know. I'm kind of depressed now. Chuck Jones has passed now.
Yeah, I know.
Talk about a guy who shaped your mind when you were a kid.
89.
God bless him. All right. On the other hand, there's somebody from Austin, Texas on the website. It's probably Bobby, but even so, that's a heck of a skip. I'm Nick Francesco with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton on the buttons. We're taking your calls, and we're going to speak to Skip from Rochester. Either that or we're skipping the guy from Rochester. I don't know which it is.
I hope not.
Yeah.
you guys are hard to get on to now. Your show's getting bigger.
Thank you. Well, you call early and call often.
Anyway, I got a flaky computer, kind of, and I'm just debating
what's a computer?
Well, it's probably flaky because of what I've done to it, but...
the person behind the keyboard.
Right, it's the keyboard driver. That is to say, the guy driving the keyboard. Go ahead.
K62-300, AMD stuff,
mm-hmm.
with Windows ME.
Yep. Stop it. Just keep going. Keep going, Skip.
How much memory?
Okay, 128.
Okay.
Add, subtract, PC fill-in, zone alarm, and Roadrunner.
Mm-hmm.
And miscellaneous like that.
Yep.
And a number of annoyances. Okay.
Besides the operating system, go ahead.
Well, yeah, occasional lockups right before the screen that tells you to, you can turn off.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Blue screens occasionally.
Yep.
Even the little ones that come and say, hey, this is a neat one. Can I send this back to Microsoft?
Right.
The error reporting, yeah.
And then for a while there, I was getting my icons on the desktop scrambled every time I booted up.
Yep.
But that's gone away now. And then the most recent little tiny one that when you change a window size or something like that, you change the view of a window, it's supposed to save it. But the next time you come back, it's back shrunk again.
Well, that's the basic one. You're running an antivirus program?
PC Sillin.
When was the last time you updated it?
It updates about every day or two.
Make sure of that, don't you?
It's an automatic update. It says, do you want to do it? And I say yes, and it clicks, and it cranks, and it does its thing.
Sometimes it's good for any virus tracker just to open it up and look at the settings and make sure the updates are actually taking place.
Yeah, because
there's a screen that comes up and says it's all done, okay,
right,
and
then
you check it, and then occasionally, even periodically, it does a whole scan of the computer all by itself.
Right. You do want to look at, if it has logs, look at the log and see what the update has gone to. Because I've noticed that sometimes it says don't have to update it. It's the current one, and it's been doing that for 3 months. But still, you should check that out.
There are different sizes each time.
Yeah. That's good. Well, you should check, but always check the logs.
And it's not necessarily the download isn't running. It may not be applying completely. And the main screen for the antivirus programs usually give you the date of the virus definitions.
The other thing that could be going on is that you may have a corruption in your registry.
Okay, I could have that. I don't think I've got any old drivers.
What you could try doing is reinstalling that great operating system over itself again. But
okay,
the problem is that's the whole problem is Microsoft didn't come out with many patches, fixes, or like they did with Windows 98 when you were getting the blue screens or download or shutdown or all that.
Well, I was having the same kind of problems a little bit under 98 is why I went to ME.
Well, in that case, the problem may be a memory problem. Let me suggest this. On our website, which you can get to by going to wham1180.com, go down to the lower left, click on our pretty faces. Then go to the website and then pick up click on our link to our site. And from there you will see a list on the lower right of the websites that we've shown people. And if you go there, you will find a link to something called MemTest 86. That's a memory tester. Download it, install it on a floppy. It'll give you the instructions on how to do that. And let it run. It'll take overnight.
Okay.
But that should tell you if you're having a problem with memory.
Okay. Could old programs get into this kind of stuff?
Absolutely possible.
Yeah.
But I would...
Like last night I was running... I pulled up an old version of the Windows version of Norton Commander.
Yes. Oh, that'll definitely cause you problems.
Because they're not designed to work under ME.
Yeah, that'll definitely cause you problems.
Norton Commander or something
They run. Okay, they run. But they don't run right underneath.
Yeah, okay. So you think I could be contaminated from that kind of stuff?
Yeah,
very easily.
Oh, very.
Can you just redo Windows ME on top of Windows ME?
Yes, you reinstall it over itself, and if you're lucky, it'll fix all those problems.
Hopefully.
But then don't run the old programs again.
Okay, because, I got a SanDisk thing here, and I got to the point finally where I can't uninstall it, I can't reinstall it right. It doesn't want to, you know,
it's likely that you've done some damage with some of those old programs, particularly the low-level ones like Norton Commander.
And if the damage is that extensive, you may actually have to erase Windows and reload it from scratch.
Right, but first try reinstalling it on top of itself.
Yeah, okay, so some of these things that the Norton Commander can do, you can't do elsewhere.
That's exactly right, but I'm sorry, unless they've got an update for ME, you're just going to cause yourself more trouble. Okie doke?
Okay, thank you, Mark.
Thanks. Our next caller is Rob from Spencerport. Welcome, Rob. What's your question? Excuse me. I beg your pardon.
Hi. I have a boot-up question for you. This is a Dell machine with Windows ME, which I have yet to have a problem with. And I'm wondering how I can see, when it's booting up, how I can see what it's doing. It just goes from the...
Have you tried hitting the escape key?
Yeah, that doesn't work.
How about holding down the control key? That'll bring you up to the menu, and I believe then you can do a step through.
Is there a way I can do it? I can set it so it'll do this every time?
There used to be in 98, you could edit the MS-DOS.sys file so it always gave you the menu, and then you could set the default to always be
set. Yeah, but he doesn't want to do the menu. He wants to just see it as it boots up.
My old machine used to do that. I used to know, you know just what it was doing.
Sure.
No, ME took that feature away.
Yeah, there's no easy way to do that. Once it has booted up, however, there is a file called bootlog on your... At the root level of your C drive, C:\.
Mm-hmm. It's still invisible, though, isn't it?
It's still invisible, but you should be able, if you for example, go into View All Files, you should see it there, and you should be able to open it with Notepad or whatever.
Okay.
And then you can see what booted up where and when. And that shows you way more detail than you will ever care about.
Okay. Very good.
Okay, no.
Quick question about CDs.
Sure.
Is there any advantage or any disadvantage getting cheap CDRs? You know, you can get spindles that are, you know, dirt cheap as opposed to brand name ones.
Yeah, the advantage is you'll get a lot more of those really nifty high-tech coasters for your parties.
And the other thing, too, is usually the cheaper ones are at a lower speed. They might only be, 8X, 10X, or 12X.
Mm-hmm. Or 2X. I have bought inexpensive CDs, not to say cheap, that will work fine at 2X or 1X, and you go up to even 4X and coaster them.
Yep. But the biggest danger is that if they are too cheap and manufactured too cheaply, the material will flake off of the plastic layer, and you actually lose data, and so they're worthless for doing what they want them to.
Basically, if you're making CDs for people you don't like, you can use cheap ones. But for everybody else, you know, if you have a friend who's into skeet, then you can buy them some. But
if they burn, you're not necessarily clear sailing.
It's exactly right. Because they're just
test them out.
What makes them cheap? They use cheap materials. Yeah. How long do cheap materials last? Not very long.
Come back to it in a week, and the disc may
or
be unreadable.
Or a month or a year. If you're doing it for anything that you want more than a month, give it up.
Okie doke.
You know, pay the money, and suck it up. You know, be a man. Okay.
Yep, thanks.
Now, tell your point at it. Our next caller is Michael from Rochester. Welcome, Michael. What's your question?
Pretty basic one. I have just a 6 GB hard drive. The rest of the system I'm really pretty pleased with still. Mm-hmm. It's three and a half years old.
Yeah.
What's the best way to add hard drive space now that I have cleaned and saved all I'd really like to save?
Well, then just add a second drive as a second drive, a slave to the first.
Yeah, you can put in a whole brand new drive. That could be, I don't care, 30 gig, 50 gig, who cares? As
50,
long as your
80.
As long as your BIOS will take it.
Go to any local store and they...
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
You can either go somewhere that'll, any one of the shops in town that'll put it in for you, or you can go to any one of the superstores and buy one and put it in yourself. That's, depends on your level of comfort with that. But once you've done that, now you'll have a 6 gig drive that you can put all your programs on, and then that 60 gig drive where you can put all your data and the other things like games and stuff. See, when you go to install a program, you don't have to put it on the C drive.
Okay.
You get a choice of where to put it.
A lot of folks ignore it because they just go...
Right,
bing, 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 hitting enter.
But one of the choices will be, where do you want to put it? Generally speaking, I'll put most of the normal program things on the C drive and all the data things on the D drive.
Okay.
That way it's easier to back up the D drive. If you've got to wipe out your C drive, you don't lose any of your data. I use, an email program called Eudora.
Okay.
And in Eudora, I can specify a different drive for my data. So although Eudora lives on C, my data lives somewhere else.
Right.
So even if I have to wipe out the C drive and reload Eudora, all my data are somewhere else and happy.
Okay. And I've done add-ins myself.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not hard at all.
Yeah, you just got to make sure you set the second drive up as a slave and your other one is the master, and it should find it. Sometimes you might have to tell in the BIOS if it's not, you know, if it's set to none and you're adding the second drive, make sure it's set to auto and it'll find it.
All right.
Doggy doggy.
Great. Thanks very much.
Thank you so much. We are going to take another break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with Rob Linton, and with me, Nick Francesco, on Soundbites, only on 1180 WHAM. Everyone within the sound of my voice to get down on their knees and thank whoever it is they thank that they were not in the studio during the last break. I'm Nick Francesco with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, each and every one of whom should be committed right now. Before we get back to the phones, I want to talk about the poll. On our website, soundbites.org, we have a weekly poll. Last week's poll was 299 votes strong. Thank you, each and every one of you. Who is the computer guru in your family? We'd like to thank Paul Doering, who hasn't listened to the show since November of last year, for his for sending in that poll. If you have a poll idea, please send it to us. 299 of you voted. 84% of you said, I am the computer guru in my family, followed by my child, my spouse, a professional, a friend, and another family member. A neighbor got 0 votes, so it's nice to know that the people near you are not bothered by your fetish.
They have their own.
They have their own, exactly. And so we'd like to thank all 299 of you who voted. This week's poll has to do with our news story on Media Player. And the question is, I use Media Player. And your choices are to play CDs only, to play DVDs only, to play everything, only when forced to, only by accident, and not on your tintype. So far, we have 59 votes in on, 60 votes in on the poll. And the number one lead is only when forced to. So if you have, if you've ever used or not used or have anything to say at all, go to soundbites.org and vote. We'd like to beat 300 this week, so help us out. And while you're there, please join in the Soundbite Forum. You can, if you scroll down just a little bit, you will see the Soundbites forums, a link to them. If you join in, you'll be able to talk to other Soundbites fanatics, get your questions answered in between the shows. We do not answer questions, but I have to clarify this, folks.
Yeah.
We do not answer questions that you send in through the comments page on wham1180.com. We don't answer questions there. It says so right on the page where you click to bring up the comment form. That's only comments about the show. If you want to give us a poll idea or you've got a question or a comment about the show itself, that's what that one's for. We answer questions on the air for an hour and 40 minutes every week, and then the rest of the time you can go into the Soundbites forum and talk to folks there. If you do join the forum, please put the city and state that you're from.
Yeah, we're not going to pass on your email address and anything else, but it just kind of gives us the information to know where our callers are coming from.
Right, we're hoping in the future to have some interesting little extra things going on, but without your city and state, you probably won't know about them.
You might lose out.
So if you'll do that, if you're already in there and you haven't got your city and state in, you can update it. We're going to go back to the phones now and talk to Kurt from Pittsburgh. Welcome, Kurt. What's your question?
Nick, I want to make you filthy rich.
Thank you.
But in order to do that, I have to install Stock Investor Pro on my computer. I could install it on one computer which was running under Windows NT. And I'm also trying to install it on another computer which is running under Windows 98. And I can't do it. It gives me a nasty message, component move data error information. And it does that after it's 7% installed.
Is the program supposed to be able to run under 98? Because sometimes they're NT only.
And is it? Do they want Windows 98 Second Edition? You might want to check that because there were a number of updates. See, the problem with Windows 98 and 98 Second Edition is, Windows forgot a heck of a lot of drivers and updates and everything else. So that's why they came out with the second edition, because it fixed a lot of the known problems that the first one didn't come with. So if you're only running Windows 98, you might want to, and the easiest way to find out about that is if you go into Control Panel under System. When you click on the System, it opens up a screen and it'll tell you what version of Windows 98 you're running. If you're only running Windows 98, you might want to upgrade that to 98 Second Edition.
And how do I do that?
You're going to have to go out and buy the CD. One of the big local computer store here, I believe, is still selling it. It's like $99, but it'd be a wise investment if you still plan on using that computer for quite a while. Going to 98 Second Edition is a good move.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Our next caller, Dave from Fairport. Welcome, Dave. What's your question?
Well, I have a couple of problems I think are interrelated, and I hope you can help me with them. I have Windows ME, and I tried to, it has the thing where you can set a restore point and a system restore.
Right.
Well, just for kicks, because the only restore point I saw in there was last June, I went to set a restore point.
Yeah.
Sorry, you can't set a restore point. Please shut down and restart and try again.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I did that once or twice or a dozen times, and that didn't help. So I said, well, let me just do the normal stuff to clean it up and see if that helps. And I scanned disk thorough, and I sat around for about 6 hours because it's a 30-gig hard drive.
Yeah.
And it gets to within 1,102 clusters of the end and just stops. It doesn't go any farther, doesn't quit the application or anything, just stops doing it.
Right.
It's probably finding and mapping bad blocks.
Well,
if you let it sit there
too,
for a week, like one of our previous callers, it might finish.
Yeah.
I tried to defrag, and it says it gets about 4 or 5% into
have you,
let him finish his question.
But if he's doing it in regular mode, though, he's got to do it in safe mode.
Okay. Yeah. We don't know what his problem was. But
I've done it in safe mode, too.
Like.
And it says, sorry, I can't access part of the, I'm going to sign it like it's a person.
Right.
Cannot find part of the, or can't access part of the drive.
Thank you, that's a different problem. I needed to hear the question. Here,
run, scan,
yeah,
disk,
but I was also
thorough.
Trying,
here's the problem. It sounds like you have, one of the things that could be causing this is that your BIOS is incorrectly reporting the size of your drive.
And that might be a very minor grain. It might be saying 29 gigs when it's really 30 gigs.
Right. And what it's trying to do is seek past the end of your real drive.
Okay. And that would be the reason why it's on defrag, it's saying I can't access part of your drive?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's trying to put things in a place on the drive that it isn't. Now, that generally only happens in one of two cases. One is you have a bad or messed up virus, BIOS, or old BIOS, or you manually set the numbers in the BIOS.
Yeah, but he'd have to manually set them, because set to auto is going to do it.
Unless the BIOS doesn't recognize it completely.
Right. What size hard drive is it?
30 gig.
Yeah, but
it should be recognized. But the
BIOS, yeah.
Right.
But that's usually a rare problem. It sounds like there might be an issue with the hard drive itself.
It could be damaged.
And would that only manifest itself with that problem? Because everything else seems to work fine.
Well, if the only things that access the end of your hard drive are those two tools, that's the only time you'll see the problem.
How full is your hard drive? Are you using
it? Not full at all. It's like,
right. So you're not using that.
It could be a bad sector in there.
It could be a bad sector. Here's what I'd like to suggest, and it's the fastest but not the cheapest solution. Buy a new hard drive. Format it with Windows. You'll probably want to get a better version of Windows. But format it with Windows, and then move and put all your programs back on it, then move all your data back over.
What if I were to format and recover this one with the disks that they gave me?
You might want to do an F disk.
Yeah, instead.
Be sure you have any of your data backed up, because the recovery software won't.
That was my next question, is when you go to, let's say I wanted to put it on a CD, is there, the quick way to do that is you just say you take all these programs you want to save and you just say send them to.
You can't do it with programs, you can only
data.
Do it with data. You'll have to reinstall all your programs.
Mm-hmm.
But the data you need to save off to the CD-ROM or wherever you
want
them.
And your settings, if you use Outlook, you can export those out.
The settings, your favorites folder, stuff like that should all go to the should all go to the CD, and then everything else you'll have to reinstall.
All right, so short of buying a new hard drive and doing everything you said, format and recover is probably my only...
Do an F-disk.
What's that mean?
F-disk is added the DOS prompt, and what it does is it literally wipes out the original partition of the machine, and you're reestablishing it. So what you do is you delete the partition and then reestablish the partition, recreate it, and then format it.
But does your machine have a real version of Windows, or does it have a recovery CD?
It has a recovery CD.
Yeah, that's what I figured. You'd have to talk
recovery,
to the tech folks.
The recovery probably does the format itself.
Probably does. Give that a try.
All right, can I ask you another quick question?
We have to take a break. I'm sorry. There goes the music. I apologize.
All right.
We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton on the buttons, and Mina Francesco on the longest-running radio show in the universe, Soundbite. No, not radio show. Computer radio show, Soundbites, on 1180 WHAM. It's true. We're back. I'm Nick Francesco with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton on the buttons, and we're talking to Joe in his car. Joe, you're pulled over, right?
Yes, I am.
God bless you. What's your question?
Okay, that was quick.
It was quick.
Yeah, it was. When I'm opening msconfig, and I should see the ScanReg line there, and it isn't there, how do I get it to show up there?
ScanReg. No, when you open msconfig, you should see your... what version of Windows you're running?
This 98 second edition.
You should see the autoexec, the config file...
and the startup
menu. SysNE and Win.
And then the startup folder.
Right. And in the startup folder, like on one computer I've got it, the ScanReg line is there. But in this other computer I have, it's not there.
You've got somebody who's got ScanReg in their startup folder?
I've seen that before.
Yeah.
No, it's not in the startup.
It's in the startup items.
I mean in the startup items.
Yeah.
And msconfig, right.
Right.
Along with MSTask and MM.
Yeah, I've seen it there quite often myself. Now you should turn it off.
Turn it off?
Yeah, you want it turned off.
Oh, you don't want it to ScanReg when you boot?
No.
Oh. Well, how do you turn it off? I mean, how do you turn it? Okay, I know how to turn it off.
Uncheck it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Uncheck it.
It's not
needed.
Okay, I thought it was something that Windows put there automatically.
Yeah, it did, but or some other program might, and you don't need it.
Okay. One more quick question.
Sure.
Last week I called, and I asked about an error message about Explorer causing an invalid instruction, and you said it might be in memory, but the memory tested okay. What else could it be?
What program did you use to check your memory?
I took it out and had it tested at a store.
Ah, okay. That's a good thing.
Yeah.
If it isn't that, then it is probably either a conflict with another program. Finding that is, like, good luck.
Unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
Or it could be...
A corrupt DLL somewhere.
Well, does it happen all the time or only when you go to specific websites?
Every now and then it might happen every 10 boots I'll get that message.
Have you tried the system file checker?
I haven't tried that yet.
Run SFC for system file checker.
Right.
In Windows 98, it will check your system files and recover them from your cabs if it finds a damaged one.
One other thing. What size memory stick is this?
It's 256 PC133.
I was going to say, because memory, sometimes they don't act up until, granted you did the right thing and took it to a store to have it tested, but sometimes these things won't show up until they have a sufficient amount of heat applied to them.
Yeah, we usually do a 24-hour burn test.
Yeah, because so if you just took it in, they quick just popped it in there, it tests okay. It could be something that needs to be heated up for a while, and then it causes an issue.
Okay, this starts on cold boot too, so it's not like, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it might not be that.
No,
so this is, yeah, I would do what Steve said. I would do the system file checker and see if that fixes the problem.
Well, it's most likely a file conflict somewhere.
Could be.
Yeah, or a corrupted file, and system file checker will solve that.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you very much. Our next caller, Dick from Farmington. Welcome, Dick. What's your question?
Yeah, so I'm having a problem with the Windows registry.
Yeah.
About once a week when I boot up, it says Windows is having a problem accessing the registry. And it reboots me, fixes it, and takes me back to a land beyond time that I've never seen before.
Yeah, it goes to a backup version of the registry.
I mean, it gives me a screensaver that I've never even seen in my life. It says it's an AOL screensaver.
Mm-hmm. Set the Wayback Machine, Sherman.
Yeah, really.
So what I do is I set it to go back to a previous date, and that seems to fix it. But this, I mean, it's constant. Once a week, twice a week.
Well, I'll tell you what you can do is if you, because I don't think we have it up on our website, the
Yeah, we do. There's the Easy Clean program. The link's on our website, but it's broken now, and I couldn't find it again. There's a couple of programs. In fact, we were mentioning earlier ScanReg from Microsoft that's built into Windows to scan your registry and try to repair any problems. But it sounds like you might have some damage that it tries to repair and can't, or keeps getting caused by some incompatible thing you're running.
I see.
The Easy Clean. Matter of fact, if you email me, I can email it back to you.
Okay.
It's a program that you can install, and it will go in and look at the registry for things that are no longer needed.
Okay.
And it'll help clean out, and it'll also clean out, there's another area in there where you can clean out files that are no longer needed.
Okay.
So just email me, and I'll send it back to you.
Okay. Now, would upgrading my version of Windows, because I use your favorite version, of course, ME, would upgrading that solve a problem?
What type of machine do you have?
I have an 800 megahertz.
Go to XP.
XP would solve that problem?
It has a new type of registry file in it.
Which is far more stable.
Right, but then you have to worry, as you just mentioned, about compatibility with anything else you're running.
I'm told that Roadrunner doesn't...
I'm running XP, and it loves Roadrunner.
They may not
not
support it, which means they won't answer your questions. It doesn't mean it doesn't work.
No, yeah. I've never had a day's worth of trouble with it.
Right?
Right, that's why we're here. The other thing is, if you're having a registry problem, you may not want to upgrade to anything.
Okay.
Because the registry problem might just come right along into the new registry.
It's not likely to go away. Huh?
Right. You probably want to install a fresh copy, but that means copying all your data, making sure it's backed up, all that stuff.
And reinstalling all your programs.
All your programs. So that's the safest thing, because you really do, you don't have a clue as to where in the registry the problem, well, nobody does. And so consequently, you don't know if it's going to come over when you update.
I've seen people that just every 6 months, they wipe their hard drive, reinstall from scratch, and that keeps the problems from accumulating.
Right, and they seem to think that's a normal thing you should be able to do. And of course, that's when all our Unix friends laugh at us, because they've got machines that are
running
for 8 years.
But if you want, go ahead and email me. I'll send you that program. Worse off, it'll just clean it out, see if that helps your problem.
Okay, great. I appreciate it.
All right.
Thanks.
Thanks a lot.
Now, we're going to take a quick break now, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave and Steve and Rob and me, Nick, on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. The data capacity of the human brain is 227 megabytes. And our next caller is Jeff from... that's true, actually. And our next caller is Jeff from Henrietta. Welcome, Jeff. What's your question?
I'm running Windows Millennium.
Mm-hmm.
It froze on me the other day.
Mm-hmm. Stop it, Dave.
No big deal. I'm kind of used to it.
The new millennium, operating system.
I've also got a computer running Windows 98 that's networked with it.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I was able to get on the 98 machine and transfer files to and from the millennium machine that has froze in the other room.
Sure.
Depends on which program is frozen and what background tasks are still running.
Is there a way to get at the tasks?
Sometimes.
Somehow
you
from
can
the
do,
remote machine.
Is there a way to
kill
them?
Yeah, you can do a Control-Alt-Delete, and if that much of Windows is still functioning, it will bring up the task manager.
The task manager didn't come up.
Right.
So that
mostly
much is not
what
working.
Happens when Windows of any version freezes. Here's the problem. Windows was designed to run on... When the Macintosh was first created, all the hardware, all the software were all created together. And they worked together like magic. Mm-hmm. On Windows, the original hardware, which really has not changed in 30 years, was never designed to do graphical stuff. And so the graphical thing was kludged onto the front. And the least well-designed part of any graphical system running on the Intel platform is the front-end graphical part. So that freezes fairly regularly in every version of Windows. Mm-hmm. The stuff in the background may still be going on, but you can't get to the screen. You can't get to the keyboard. You can't get to the mouse.
Is there a way to unfreeze it from...
You might want to look for some updated video drivers.
I've tried. I don't...
Yeah, it's unlikely because Windows... Because it's ME.
It's like you need the Unix kill task command.
Right.
Yeah.
Which you, and in Unix, you can send to other computers.
Right.
Right.
I don't know of anything that works. If you had something like... Well, see... I don't know. If you had something like terminal services running under ME, but of course there is no such thing as that, but if you had that, maybe you could do it. But it's, the problem is that everything is tied into that GUI, and it just is not really brilliantly designed. And there's not much that can be done about that at this point. In order to run it fast enough to be useful, Microsoft stuck it in the most important level of the operating system, and so when it freezes, it takes a lot with it.
What is this machine that you're running that well-liked operating system on it, what is it, a Pentium what?
It's a 686 instead Xerox on a Pentium board. It's running at 300 megahertz. I got a 12 gig hard drive in it. It's not really upgradable to XP.
No, it really isn't.
No, it's,
And it's almost not quite enough for ME.
Yeah, almost.
Yeah.
Your big choices here are to live with what you have or downgrade, or as some of us think of it, upgrade to Windows 98 Second Edition.
Well, see, he just said it. What might be part of the problem is he's on the border for even ME.
Right.
Well, and it's not that ME has the problem. It's another program that freezes it.
Yeah, but it's enough for the operating system to put a strain on it that it, you know, because it's just bare minimum. And if you're just on bare minimum for the operating system, and then you're putting the software on it, and it wants to do things too, now you're really stretching that rubber band pretty thin.
How much memory does this machine have?
It's got 160, and I have 300. For a soft file.
Okay. You don't have to tell me what this program is that you're running that freezes it, but it's only one program that freezes the system?
It's not that one program is always the cause, but every time I run the program, if I leave it go for a couple hours, it will eventually freeze.
It is very likely that whatever that program is, it is either badly written or is not written to run on ME. It may run fine on your Windows 98 machine and not run on your ME machine. And there is no cure for that other than upgrading to an ME version of that software.
No, it's supposed to be 98, ME, XP.
You still might want to look at the website of whoever wrote that software and see if there is an update for ME. You might want to take a look around the net and see if people are complaining about that program under ME. It may not be anything you can have any control over. I'm sorry.
But knowing you're not alone helps.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
I've got one other quickie for you.
Very fast, please.
98 and Millennium both had a little feature that when you restarted, it would reopen the folders that you had open when you shut down. Is there any way to turn that back on? Because when you upgrade to the latest and greatest, they turned it off.
Yes, they did.
The easiest way is to put the folders you want open in your startup folder. So when Windows starts up, it automatically opens anything in that startup folder.
Yep.
It would always reopen the ones that you had open on it.
Yes, they did take that feature away.
Sorry.
I was hoping you'd know how to turn it back on.
No, I don't. Oh, I'm sorry.
Thanks anyway, guys.
I do apologize, but it's just, there you are. Our next caller is Jack from Waterloo. Welcome, Jack. What's your question?
Yes, good afternoon. I have a similar situation in that I'm operating a unit with 98 Second Edition, and another one with Windows ME, networked together, tied into a cable modem, protected by Norton Internet Security 2001. Everything's been working fine until about a week ago. The unit with the 98 Second Edition, Norton will not let it online unless I disable Norton while I go online. The other unit still goes online. Norton lets it through, recognizes it, and so forth.
What machine is this? Is this Norton on? Is it on?
It's on the 98 Second Edition.
Oh, whoa! And it's the 98 Second Edition box that can't get on the internet.
Right.
You may have accidentally told Norton Internet to disallow that machine from going. You might have to go into the Norton settings file and look at your list of allowed and unallowed programs.
And are you going through a router?
Through a hub.
With dual IPs?
No, he's got both.
Yes.
You've got two separate IPs?
Yes.
One thing you might want to look into is getting a router, a hardware router, which shares your high-speed connection, but also has a firewall built into it.
And you can do away with one of the IP addresses.
Or you can just get rid of Norton Internet Security and run something like Zone Alarm on both machines. I mean, if internet, if, see, I'm a little confused as to how you're running that. The machines are not running through each other.
No, the ME does run through the 98 second edition. Yes.
Okay, then you're actually then you're actually doing IP sharing.
On the, oh, I'm sorry. Yes, for the network.
Right.
Yes. Yes. I'm sorry.
The HTTP.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So if you're doing internet sharing, either you've accidentally turned off internet sharing. In other words, you're using one IP address, and the system knows that if one is using it, the other one can't. Or, in fact, you have told Norton Internet Security to disallow the 98 box that is running on from getting to the net. And you need to go through the...
The simplest way would be, like you said, though, is to take that off and quick download zone alarm and try it on both.
Right. Yeah. You're still doing internet sharing, though, so that's a problem. Your cheapest solution, your best solution is probably to get some sort of hub. If you've got two IP addresses from your cable modem company, then two IP addresses would let you just get a hub and hook the two machines to a hub, get zone alarm, and you're done.
Okay, they do feed into a hub now, and then the hub feeds...
Yeah, into the cable, right.
Well, then what's happening is the second machine, if the
second machine works, the first one doesn't.
If the Windows ME machine is not physically connected to the 98 machine, and the cable modem is not physically connected to the 98 machine, then Norton Internet Security 2001 has nothing to do with the Windows ME machine. It's not touching it at all. So you can just get rid of it and then put zone alarm on both machines and you're done.
Oh, okay.
Or does your 98 machine have two Ethernet cards and you're running internet connection sharing?
It does have two Ethernet cards, yes.
All right, so you're running internet connection sharing, so you only have one Roadrunner address. The ME is going through 98.
Right.
So it is probably something in the Norton settings that you have accidentally disallowed the 98 machine from getting to the internet.
That's what it is.
Okay.
Okie doke.
I'll go to those and look them up. I thank you very much.
Thank you. I'm sorry we are done for another week, but we will be back next Saturday at 12:20. I want to thank Dave Enright and Steve Ray for their able answering on this show. Rob Linton for keeping us online. We'll be back next Saturday at 12:20. I'm Nick Francesco for Soundbites, only on 1180 WHAM.